Fine. And Griff's got the old Triple Horn place out on 5 Possum Road.
That place was fallen down when we were 10, she remembered. And she loved it.
He's fixing it up. Likely take him the rest of his life, but he's got it going.
You're stock full of news, Forrest.
That's only because you haven't been around to hear it. You should go see Emma Kate.
I wish she'd come today.
She's working, and she's likely still in the annoyed stage where you're concerned. You might have to work some to bring that down.
It's hard knowing how many people I hurt.
Then don't do it again. If you decide to leave, say goodbye proper.
She looked out the back door, saw Clay running around with his son on his shoulders, and her grandmother pushing Callie on the swings. I'm not going anywhere. I've already been gone too long. She slept in her childhood bed on a new mattress, and though the night was cool, kept the window open a crack so the night air could waft in. She woke to a quiet rain, snuggled right in with a smile on her face as the sound of it pattered so peacefully. She'd get up in just a minute, she told herself, check on Callie, fix her baby some breakfast. She'd deal with the unpacking and all the other chores that needed doing in just 5 more minutes. When she woke again, the rain had softened to a misty drizzle, a drip and plop from leaves and gutters. Around it, she heard the birds singing. She couldn't remember the last time she'd woken to the song of birds. Rolling over, she glanced at the pretty glass clock on the bedside table, then shot up like an arrow from a bow. She scrambled up, dashed through the bath and into Callie's room to find the bed empty. What kind of a mother was she, sleeping till after 9 o'clock and not having a clue where her daughter might be? Barefoot, a little panicked, she raced downstairs. A fire burned in the living room hearth. Callie sat on the floor, the old mutt Clancy curled beside her. Stuffed animals sat in a line while Callie busily poked and prodded at the pink elephant lying trunk up on a kitchen towel.
He's very sick, Gamma.
Oh, I can see that, baby. Curled in a chair, sipping coffee, Ada May smiled. He's looking peaked, no doubt about it. It's lucky you're such a good doctor.
He's going to be all better soon. But he has to be brave 'cause he needs a shot.
Gently, she rolled him over and used one of her fat crayons as a syringe.
Now we kiss it. Kiss the hurt. Kisses make hurts feel better.
Kisses make everything feel better. Morning, Shelby. I'm so sorry, Mama. I overslept. It's barely 9 on a rainy morning, Ada May began as Callie leaped up, ran to Shelby.
We're playing hospital, and all my animals are sick. I'm going to make them better. Come help, Mama.
Your mama needs her breakfast. Oh, I'm fine. I'll just... Breakfast is important, isn't it, Callie?
Uh-huh. Gamma made me breakfast after Granddaddy had to go help the sick person. I had scrambled eggs and toast with jelly.
Scrambled eggs. She lifted Callie for a kiss. And you're all dressed so nice. What time did she get up?
About 7. And don't start. Why would you deny me a couple hours with my only granddaughter? Have we had fun, Callie Rose?
Lots and lots and lots of fun. I gave Clancy a dog cookie. He sat like a good boy, and he shook my hand, too. And Granddaddy gave me a piggyback ride all the way downstairs because I was quiet and didn't wake you up. He had to go help the sick people. So I'm helping the sick animals.
Why don't you bring your animals in the kitchen while I fix your mama some breakfast? She's going to eat it all up like you did.
I don't want you to have to feel you need to...
Yes'm, she finished, warned by the narrowed stare. You can have a Coke, since you never did learn to be civilized and drink coffee. Callie, you can bring all the sick animals and fix them up right over there.
You're going to have eggs with ham and cheese. Get some protein in there. I've got the whole day. I took off work until middle of the week. I've got a connection with the boss.
How will Granny run the place without you?
Oh, she'll manage. Get your Coke. Sit down there while I get this going. She's fine, Shelby,
Ada May added in an undertone.
She's busy and she's happy, and your daddy and I enjoyed her company this morning. Now, I don't have to ask how you slept. You look better already.
I slept 10 hours. New mattress. Ada May chopped some ham.
And the rain. Makes you want to sleep all day. Haven't been sleeping well, have you?
Not especially.
Or eating much.
It's been hard to work up an appetite.
A little pampering might make that easier.
She glanced over at Callie.
I'm going to tell you, you've done a good job with that girl. Of course, some of it's just disposition, but she's well-mannered without being all prim about it. Something that just makes my back itch in a child. And she's happy.
She wakes up every day raring to go.
She wanted you first thing, but all I had to do was take her to your bedroom door, show her you were there sleeping, and she was fine. That's a good thing, Shelby. A child who clings usually says more about the mother clinging. And I expect it's been hard not to cling on both sides these past months when it's just been the two of you.
I never saw any kids her age around the neighborhood up north. But then it was so awful cold, and it seemed it was snowing every 5 minutes. Still, I was going to look for a good preschool, just so she could socialize, but I just didn't after, you know. I didn't know if it was the right thing for her after. And you and Daddy came for a while, and Granny came, and that was good. It helped us both having y'all there.
I hope it did. We all worried we'd left you alone too soon.
Ada May poured whisked eggs in the skillet over the ham chunks, grated cheese into the mix.
I don't know if I could have left if you hadn't said you'd come home as soon as you could.
I don't know how I'd have gotten through if I hadn't known I could come home.
Mama, that's enough eggs for two people. You'll eat what you want, then one bite more.
Over her shoulder, she sent Shelby a narrow look.
They're wrong when they say you can't be too thin, because you are. We're going to plump your mama up, Callie, and put roses in her cheeks.
Why?
'Cause she needs it.
Ada May plated the eggs, added a slice of toast, passed it over the counter.
And one bite more.
Yes, ma'am.
Now,
Ada May busied herself tidying the already tidy kitchen.
You've got a hot stone massage booked at 2 o'clock at Mama's.
I do?
Could do with a facial, too, but I'll do that myself later in the week. A woman drives clear down from Philadelphia hauling a toddler's earned a good massage. And Callie and I have plans this afternoon.
You do?
I'm taking her over to Susanna's. You remember my good friend Susanna Lee? She couldn't come yesterday as she had her sister's girl's wedding shower. That's Scarlett. Scarlett Lee, you went to school with Scarlett.
Sure. Scarlett's engaged.
Got a May wedding planned to a nice boy she met in college. They're getting married here as Scarlett's people are here, then moving clear up to Boston where he's got a job in advertising. Scarlett got her teaching degree, so that's what she'll be doing.
A teacher? Shelby had to laugh. As I remember, Scarlett hated school like it was spinach soaked in arsenic.
Goes to show. What it goes to show, I can't say, but it goes to show. Anyway, I'm taking Callie over to Susanna's, show her off some, and Susanna's getting her granddaughter, Chelsea. She's 3, like Callie. That's her son Robbie's daughter, who married Tracy Lynn Boran. I don't think you've met Tracy. Her people are from Pigeon Forge. She's a nice girl, a potter. That's one of her bowls there with the lemons in it.
Shelby glanced at the rich brown bowl with its bold blue and green swirls. It's beautiful.
She's got herself a kiln, works out of her house. They carry some of her pieces in town at the Artful Ridge and up at the hotel gift shop, too. We'll be giving you and Tracy a day off as Susanna and Chelsea and Callie and me, we're having us a play date. She'll love that. So will I. I'm going to be greedy with her for a while, so I expect you to indulge me. I'm taking her over about 11. They'll get acquainted, then we'll have lunch. If the weather lets up, we'll take them out a while.
Callie usually naps about an hour in the afternoon.
Then they'll have a nap. You can stop fretting about it, as I can see you are.
With her chin jutted up, Ada May fisted a hand on her hip.
I managed to raise you and two boys besides. I think I can handle a toddler.
I know you can. It's just, she hasn't been out of my sight in, I can't think how long. And fretting because she will be says more about me.
You were always a bright girl. I wouldn't have any other kind,
Ada May added as she came around the island, laid her hands on Shelby's shoulders.
Sweet Jesus, girl, you're nothing but knots. I booked you with Vonnie. You remember Vonnie. She's a cousin on your daddy's side.
Vaguely, Shelby thought, as cousins were legion in her family.
Vonnie Gates, Ada May continued. Your daddy's cousin Jed's middle girl. She'll work these out of you.
Shelby reached her hand back, laid it over her mother's.
You don't have to feel you need to take care of me.
Is that what you'd say to your daughter under these circumstances?
Shelby sighed. No. I'd tell her it was my job and my wish to take care.
Well then, one bite more, Ada May murmured, kissing the top of Shelby's head.
Shelby ate one bite more.
After today, you'll clear your own dishes, but not today. What do you want to do this morning?
Oh, I should unpack.
I didn't say should,
Ada May reminded her as she cleared Shelby's plate.
I said want.
It's both. I'll feel more settled once I get things put away.
Callie and I'll help you with that. When's the rest of your stuff coming?
I've got everything. I brought everything.
Everything?
Ada May stopped and stared.
Honey, they only took up a couple of suitcases. Well, and Callie's things, since you had those boxes marked. Clay Jr. didn't stack more than a half dozen boxes, if that, in the garage.
What was I going to do with all those things, Mama?
Even when I find a house, and I have to find a job first, I couldn't use all those things.
Did you know there are companies that come in, look things over, and buy furniture all at once, right out of the house?
She said it conversationally, lightly, as she rose, bent to pick up Callie, who was dancing, holding her arms up.
The realtor helped me find them. She was such a help to me with that sort of thing. I should send her flowers when the sale's all done, shouldn't I?
The question didn't distract her mother as Shelby had hoped.
All that furniture? Why, Shelby, there were 7 bedrooms in that house, and that big office, and I don't even know all the other rooms. It's as close to a mansion as I've ever been in without paying for the tour. And so new.
Shock and worry clear on her face, Ada May rubbed the heel of her hand between her breasts.
Oh, I hope you got a good price for all that.
I worked with a very reputable company, I promise. They've been in business over 30 years. I did a lot of research online on that kind of thing. I swear I could get a job as a researcher with all I've done with it, if I didn't think I'd want to shoot myself before the first week was done.
We're going to unpack, Callie. You going to help before you and Gamma go?
I'll help. I like helping, Mama.
Best helper ever. Let's get started.
Mama, do you know if Clay took up the box that had Callie's little hangers? I can't use regular ones for her things yet. He took up everything that had her name on it. I'll just go out and look, be sure.
Thanks, Mama.
Oh, I'll go out, change the car seat over to your car. I wasn't born yesterday.
The edge in Ada May's voice told Shelby her mother was still reeling from the idea of selling all that furniture. She didn't know the half of it yet.
Your daddy and I got the same one you use, Ada May added. It's all ready for her.
Mama.
Shelby stepped over and with her free arm pulled her mother into a hug.
Callie, you have the best Gamma in the whole world.
my gamma.
And that distracted Ada May. Enough, Callie thought, as she knew her mother would chew over the idea of selling all the furniture in a near to 10,000 square foot house in one fell swoop. It was odd not having Callie underfoot or playing in her eyeline, but she'd been so excited about the playdate. And it was true enough, she'd be done with the unpacking and sorting in half the time without Callie helping. By noon, with everything put away, the beds made, she wondered what in the hell to do with herself. She glanced at her laptop with some dislike, but made herself boot it up. No notices from creditors, so that was good news. Nothing yet on the sale of the house, but she wasn't expecting it. She did read a short email from the consignment shop, letting her know they'd sold two of Richard's leather jackets, his cashmere topcoat, and two of her cocktail dresses. She replied with a thank you, telling them yes, it was fine to wait until the first of the month to send a check to the address she'd left with them. With unpacking and business done, she showered, dressed. Still too early to go in for the massage, and wouldn't that be heaven? So she'd take a walk. She could use a good walk. The thin drizzle persisted, a steady trickle of wet out of a sky soft and gray as smoke. But she liked walking in the rain. She pulled on a hoodie, short, soft leather boots, and reached for her big bag, her Callie bag, and remembering she'd given it to her mother to take, pushed her wallet into the back pocket of her jeans. She felt so light, so unencumbered, she didn't know what to do with her hands, so slipped them into the pockets of the hoodie, found the little pack of wet wipes she'd stuffed in there the last time she'd worn it, when she hadn't been so unencumbered. She drew in a deep breath of the cool, damp air when she stepped outside. Just stood, breathing in with her fingers around Callie's wet wipes and the empty afternoon stretching ahead of her. Everything was greening and sprouting and blooming with the misty rain, turning the green, the color, more vibrant. All those scents, wet grass, wet earth, the tender sweetness of hyacinths dancing purple among the yellow of daffodils, drifted to her as she walked the long, familiar road. She could walk by the Lee house, just to check. It was getting on to nap time, and Callie wasn't 100% on the potty training in her sleep. About 98, but she'd be so embarrassed if she had an accident because her grandmother didn't think to take her in to pee before her nap. She could just walk by, just a quick peek to... Stop it. Just stop. She's fine. Everything's just fine. She'd listen to her mother's advice. Take the day to do what she wanted. A walk in the rain, taking her time. Time enough to study the mountains in their smoky blanket, to appreciate the spring flowers and the quiet. She glanced over at Emma Kate's house, noted the handyman truck in the drive and the bright red car behind it. She wondered how she'd approach Emma Kate now that they were both back in the ridge. And her friend got out of the car. She wore a hoodie, too, in a bold candy pink Callie would have loved. She'd changed her hair, Shelby thought, as Emma Kate pulled two market bags out of the back seat. She'd hacked off the long nut-brown braid Shelby remembered, wore it all cute and shaggy with bangs. She started to call out, then could think of nothing to say and felt stupid and awkward. As she swung the door closed, Emma Kate spotted her. Her eyebrows lifted under the warm brown fringe of bangs as she hauled one strap onto her shoulder.
Well, look who's standing out in the rain like a wet cat.
It's just a drizzle.
It's still wet.
She stood hip-shot a moment, bags hanging from her shoulders, her wide mouth unsmiling, her deep brown eyes critical even through the rain.
I heard you were back.
I heard the same about you. I hope your daddy's doing okay.
He is.
Feeling more stupid just standing there, Shelby walked up the short driveway. I like your hair.
Granny talked me into it. I'm sorry about your husband.
Thanks.
Where's your little girl?
With Mama. They have a play date with Ms. Susanna's granddaughter.
Chelsea. She's a pistol. You got a destination, Shelby? Or are you just out wandering in the wet?
I'm going into Viola's, but I have all this time on my hands with Callie off with Mama, so I'm wandering first.
Then you better come inside, say hello to my mother, or I won't hear the end of it. I've got to take her these groceries anyway.
That'd be nice. Here, let me take one.
I've got it.
Rebuffed, as she was meant to feel, Shelby hunched her shoulders as they walked to the door. Forrest said you're with someone and living in town.
I am. Matt Baker. We've been together about 2 years now. He's at Viola's right now fixing one of the sinks.
I thought this was his truck.
They have two. This is his partner's, Griffin Lott. Mama's redoing the kitchen and driving us all insane.
Emma Kate opened the door, glanced back at Shelby.
You're the talk of Rendezvous Ridge, you know. That pretty Pomeroy girl who married rich, was widowed young, come back home again. What will she do?
Emma Kate smirked a little.
What will she do?
She said again, and walked inside with her market bags. 6. Griff considered himself a patient man. He didn't fly off the handle as a rule. And when he did, all bets were off, but it took a lot of pushing to get him off the ground. But right at the moment, he was seriously considering duct taping Emma Kate's pretty adorable mother's mouth closed. He'd worked on getting the base cabinets in all morning, and she'd been peppering him with questions all morning. Breathing down his neck, hanging over his back, all but crawling up his ass. He knew damn well Matt had taken off to Ms. Vi's place to spare himself the headache of his girlfriend's sweet, chatty, and let's face it, ditzy mother. Worse, she was still dithering would be the word of the day, about the cabinets even as he installed them. And if he had to take them out because she changed her mind again, he might do worse than duct tape. He had bungee cords, and he knew how to use them.
Oh, now, Griff, honey, maybe I shouldn't have gone with the white. They're so plain, aren't they? And white's cold. It's just a cold color, isn't it? Kitchens ought to be a warm place. Maybe I should have gone with the cherry wood after all. It's so hard to know before you see them right there where they're going, isn't it? How do you know what it's going to look like until you see what it looks like?
Clean and fresh, he said, trying to sound cheerful when he wanted to grind his teeth. Kitchens should be clean and fresh, and that's what you're going to have.
Do you think so?
She stood nearly at his elbow, twisted her linked fingers together.
Oh, I don't know. Henry finally just threw up his hands and said he didn't care either way, but he'll care if it isn't right.
It's going to look great, Miss Bitsy.
He felt like someone, possibly himself, was shooting a nail gun dead center of his forehead. He and Matt had dealt with fussy clients back in Baltimore. The control freaks, the whiners, the demanders, and the ditherers. But Louisa Bitsy Addison was the undisputed queen of the ditherers. She made the previously reigning champs, John and Rhonda Turner, who'd had them tear out a wall in their row house in Baltimore, build it back in, then tear it out a second time, seem resolute, steady as a brick wall in comparison. What they'd estimated as a 3-week job, with a 3-day contingency built in, was currently in week 5. And God knew when it would end.
I don't know,
she said for the millionth time, patting her hands together under her chin.
White's kind of stark, isn't it?
He set the cabinet, pulled out his level, shoved one hand through his mop of dark blonde hair.
Wedding gowns are white.
Now that's true, and
her already big brown eyes got bigger, and a giddy thrill shone out of them.
Wedding gowns?
Oh, now, Griffin Lott, do you know something I don't? Has Matt popped the question?
He ought to throw his partner under the bus. He ought to throw him under, then back up and drive over him again. But
I was just using an example, like,
he did a frantic mental search,
magnolias, for instance, or,
sweet Jesus, give me one more,
baseballs.
Crap. The hardware's going to punch it all up, he continued, just a little desperately.
And the countertop, that warm gray's going to give you friendly and sophisticated at the same time.
Maybe it's the wall color that's wrong. Maybe I should...
Mama, you're not having those walls repainted.
Emma Kate marched in. Griff could have kissed her, could have dropped down and kissed her feet. Then he lost track of her completely when the redhead stepped in behind her. He actually thought, holy shit, and hoped he hadn't said it out loud. She was beautiful. A man didn't get to be just shy of his 30th birthday without seeing some beautiful women, even if it was just on a movie screen. But this one in the flesh was one quick wow. Masses of curling hair the color of a sunrise, all tumbling around a face that looked like it had been carved out of porcelain. If they carved from porcelain, how would he know? Soft, full lips with a perfect dip at the top, and big, deep, sad blue eyes. His heart actually skipped a couple of beats, and his ears buzzed for a minute, so he missed most of the argument between Emma Kate and her mother.
The kitchen's the heart of a home, Emma Kate.
The way you keep turning and twisting it, you're lucky to have a heart left. Let Griff work, Mama, and say hello to Shelby.
Shelby? Shelby, oh my God!
She raced across the room, grabbed the redhead in a wide, swaying hug. Shelby. Grabbed Shelby, Griff thought. Nice name, Shelby. Currently his favorite name ever. Then it clicked. Shelby, or Shelby Ann Pomeroy, as Bitsy squealed as she gave the redhead another squeeze. His friend Forrest's sister. Ms. Vi, on whom he had a mad crush. Ms. Viola's granddaughter. You could see, if you stopped being dazzled for 2 seconds, just how Ms. Vi had looked as a young woman. How Ada May might have looked 20-some years back. Ms. Vi's granddaughter, he thought again. The widow. No wonder she had sad eyes. He immediately felt guilty for wanting to wrap her up the way Bitsy was, then reminded himself it wasn't his fault her husband was dead.
Oh, I'm just sick about missing your welcome home yesterday. But Henry and I had to go to his cousin's daughter's wedding clear to Memphis, and I don't even like his cousin. Just a snooty woman puts on airs because she married a Memphis lawyer. But it was a beautiful wedding with the reception at the Peabody Hotel.
Mama, give Shelby a chance to breathe.
Oh, I'm sorry. I'm just going on and on. I'm so excited to see you. Griff, Emma Kate, and Shelby here were joined at the hip, I swear, before they were so much as a year old, right up to...
It seemed to occur to her just why Shelby was home.
Oh, honey... Oh, honey, I'm so sorry. You're so young to have such a tragedy in your life. How are you holding up?
It's good to be home.
Nothing like home. And here mine's all torn up, so I can't even fix you something nice. And you so thin, too. Honey, you're skinnier than a New York model. You always were tall enough to be one. Emma Kate, do we have any Coke? You always were fond of Coke, weren't you, Shelby?
Yes, ma'am, but don't trouble about it. I love your new cabinets, Miss Bitsy. They're so clean and fresh and just so pretty against that blue-gray on the walls. Widow or not, at that moment, Griff wanted to kiss her.
Everywhere.
Why, that's just what Griff said. He said they were clean and fresh. Do you really think...
Mama, we haven't even introduced Shelby. Shelby, this is my boyfriend's partner, Griffin Lott. Griff, Shelby, it's Foxworth, isn't it?
Yes. She turned those amazing eyes on him, and yeah, hearts could skip a beat.
It's nice to meet you.
Hi.
I'm a friend of your brother's.
Which one?
I guess both, but mostly Forrest. And I might as well tell you right off, I'm in love with your grandmother. I'm working on a way to get her away from Jackson so we can run off to Tahiti.
That wonderfully shaped mouth curved. Those sad eyes lightened just a little.
It's hard to blame you.
Griff's living out at the old Triplehorn place,
Emma Kate added.
He's rehabbing it.
So you work miracles?
As long as I can use tools. You should come by and see it sometime. It's coming along.
She smiled at him, but it didn't reach those big sad eyes this time.
You've got your work cut out for you. I need to get on. I'm due at my grandmother's place.
Now, Shelby, you come back when this is all finished and we'll have a nice long talk.
Bitsy fluttered around her.
I expect to see you in and out of here just like you used to be. You know you're the same as family here.
Thank you, Ms. Bitsy. It was nice meeting you,
she said to Griff again, turned to go.
I'll walk you out.
Emma Kate shoved the market bags at her mother.
There's cold cuts and made-up salads and plenty of ready-to-eat food. You don't have to worry about cooking until your new stove's in. I'll be right back.
Emma Kate said nothing on the way to the door.
Say hey to Granny,
she said as she opened it.
I will.
Shelby stepped out, turned. Bitsy's open welcome made Emma Kate's reserve all the more painful.
I need you to forgive me.
Why?
Because you're the best friend I've had in my life.
That was then. People change.
After shaking back her shaggy hair, Emma Kate stuck her hands in the pockets of her hoodie.
Look, Shelby, you've had a hard knock, and I'm sincerely sorry about it, but
you have to forgive me.
Pride demanded she walk away. Love wouldn't allow it.
I didn't do right by our friendship. I didn't do right by you, and I'm sorry. I'll always be sorry. I need you to forgive me. I'm asking you to remember that friendship before I ruined it, and forgive me. At least enough to talk to me, to tell me what you've been doing and how you are. Just enough for that.
Emma Kate studied her face, her dark eyes thoughtful.
Tell me one thing. Why didn't you come back when my granddaddy died? He loved you. I needed you.
I wanted to. I couldn't.
With a slow shake of her head, Emma Kate stepped back.
No, that's not enough for forgiveness. You tell me why you couldn't do something you had to know was important. Just sent flowers and a card like that was enough. Tell me the straight truth on that one thing.
He said no.
The shame of it washed over Shelby's face, burned in her heart.
He said no, and I didn't have the money or the nerve to go against him on it.
You always had nerve.
Shelby remembered the girl who'd always had nerve, like she remembered her cousin Vonnie, vaguely.
I guess I used it up. It's taken all I've got left to stand here and ask you to forgive me.
Emma Kate took a long breath.
You remember Bootlegger's Bar and Grill?
Sure I do.
You meet me there tomorrow. 7:30 should work for me. We'll talk some of this out.
I need to ask Mama if she can watch Callie.
Oh, yeah.
The chill came back, cooler and damper than the drizzling rain.
That would be your daughter, the one I've never laid eyes on.
That twisted, both shame and guilt.
I can keep saying I'm sorry, as many times as you need to hear it.
I'll be there at 7:30. Come if you can make it.
Emma Kate went back inside, then leaned back against the door and let herself cry just a little. Griff set the last base cabinet in blessed peace since Emma Kate fell on her sword and took her mother shopping. He gave himself a break, swigging Gatorade straight from the bottle and eyeing the progress. He didn't doubt the champion waffler would love every square inch of the remodeled kitchen once it was done. And it would look clean and fresh, just like the redhead. Something going on there, he mused, with Bitsy going on about how Emma Kate and Shelby had been friends practically in the womb, and Emma Kate standing there as stiff and cool as he'd ever seen her, and the redhead sad and awkward. Girl fight, he supposed. He had a sister, so he knew girl fights could be long and bitter. He'd have to poke at Emma Kate. It was just a matter of finding the right spot, getting her to open up and spill. He wanted to know. And he wondered how long was a reasonable length of time before a guy asked a widow out. He should probably be ashamed of himself for wondering, but he just couldn't drum it up. He hadn't had such a quick and strong reaction to a woman in ever, he decided, and he liked women a lot. He set the Gatorade down and decided since Matt was taking all damn day to fix a sink, he'd start on the upper cabinets. Plus, it wouldn't be just the sink, he thought as he hauled his stepladder over. There'd be conversation. Nothing got done in Rendezvous Ridge without considerable conversation. And iced tea. And questions. And long, lazy pauses. He was getting used to it, found he enjoyed the slower pace, and definitely appreciated the small-town vibe. He'd had a choice to make when Matt decided to move to Tennessee with Emma Kate. Stay or go. Find a new partner, run the business himself, or take the leap and start over more or less in a new place with new people. He didn't regret taking the leap. He heard the front door open. That took getting used to, the way people in the Ridge rarely locked a door.
Did you have to make her a new sink?
Griff called out, then set the drill on the last screw of the first upper.
Ms. Vi found a few other things for me to do.
Hey, you're moving along. This looks great.
Griff grunted, stepped down to eye the cabinet.
Word of the day is dithering, which has a picture of Bitsy Addison beside it in every dictionary across the land.
She has a little trouble sticking to decisions.
And there was Matt's gift for understatement.
I don't know how she decides to get out of bed in the morning. I'd be further along if your woman had gotten here sooner and taken Bitsy away. She's thinking the white's too white, and maybe she picked the wrong countertop, or the wrong paint color. Don't ask about the backsplash.
Too late now to change her mind on any of it.
You try telling her.
You gotta love her.
Yeah, you do. But Christ, Matt, can't we put her in a box for the next 3 days?
Grinning, Matt took off his light jacket, tossed it aside. Where Griff was long and lanky, Matt was tough and ripped. He wore his black hair neat and trim, where Griff's strayed past his collar with a hint of curl. Matt kept his square-jawed face clean-shaven, while Griff's narrow, hollow-cheeked one tended towards scruff. Matt played chess and enjoyed wine tastings. Griff liked poker and beer. They'd been as close as brothers for nearly a decade.
Got you a sub, Matt told him.
Yeah? What kind of sub?
That fire breather one you like. The one that burns off the stomach lining.
Cool.
How about we get a couple more up, take a break? A quick one? Who knows how long Emma Kate can keep Bitsy out of our hair?
Deal.
As they got to work, Griff decided to start poking.
Ms. Vi's granddaughter stopped by. The one who just moved back? The widow?
Yeah. Heard some buzz about that while I was in town. What's she like?
A heart stopper. Seriously,
he said when Matt spared him a look.
She's got hair the color of her mom's and Ms. Vi's, like that painter used.
Titian.
Right. It's long and curly, and she got their eyes, too, that dark blue that's nearly purple. She looks like something poets write about, right down to the sad eyes.
Well, her husband died, what, like right after Christmas? Happy freaking holidays.
About 3 months, Griff calculated, and that was probably too soon to ask her out on a date.
So, what's up with her and Emma Kate? Check the level.
What do you mean, what's up? Take your end up a couple hairs. Stop there, perfect.
Bitsy went on about what good friends they were, are, whatever, and the body language said the opposite. I don't remember Emma Kate ever talking about her.
Don't know,
Matt said as Griff set the screws.
Something about how she left with the guy she married.
It has to be more than that.
Griff prodded again, wondered if he'd need his drill. Matt never hung on to the more subtle details when it came to people.
A lot of people move somewhere else when they get married.
They lost touch or something.
Matt just shrugged.
Emma Kate mentioned her a couple times, but didn't have much to say about her.
Griff could only shake his head.
Matt, what you know about women could fit in a thimble. When a woman brings something up, then doesn't have much to say about it, she's got a lot to say about it.
Then why doesn't she say it?
Because she needs the right opening, the right angle. Forrest hasn't said much either, but he knows how to keep things tucked away. I didn't think about giving him an opening on it before.
Before you knew she was a heart stopper.
There's that.
Matt checked the level again, all sides, before they moved on to the next.
You don't want to start sniffing around a widow with a kid who's a friend's baby sister.
Griff only smiled as they lined up the second cabinet.
You don't want to start sniffing around some sassy southern girl who keeps telling you she's too busy to start anything up.
I wore her down, didn't I?
Best thing you ever did. Got it?
Got it.
Griff let go of the cabinet to attach it to the first.
You should ask Emma Kate what the deal is.
Why?
Because after she walked the redhead out, she had sad eyes. Before she walked her out, she was a little bit pissed, and after, she looked sad.
Really?
Yeah. So you should ask her.
Why would I ask her about something like that? Why stir it up?
Matt, geez, something's in there. It'll just stay in there being pissed or sad until it's stirred up and let out.
Like a wasp's nest,
was Matt's opinion.
You want to know so much, you ask her.
Wuss.
About this kind of stuff? Oh, yeah. And not ashamed.
He checked the level.
Right on the mark. We do good work.
We fix it.
That we do. Let's get the rest of this line up, then have a sub.
I'm with you, brother.
Viola started out doing hair for fun, doing up her sister's or her friend's hair in fancy do's like they saw in magazines. She told the story of how the first time she took the scissors and her granddaddy's straight razor to her sister Evelyn's hair, she escaped a hiding because it looked as fine as what Ms. Brenda down at Brenda's beauty salon charged good money for. She'd been 12, and from that point on in charge of cutting everybody's hair in the family and styling the girls, her mama included, for special occasions. When she'd been carrying her first, she'd worked for Ms. Brenda and had done some side business out of the tiny kitchen in the double wide where she and Jackson had started out. When Grady had been born, with her still 4 months shy of her 17th birthday, she added on manicures and worked exclusively out of the two-bedroom house they rented from Jack's Uncle Bobby. By the time her second followed close on Grady's heels, she squeezed in cosmetology school with her mother minding the babies. Viola McNee Donahue had been born ambitious and wasn't afraid to give her husband a few prods in the same direction. By the time she was 20, with 3 children and the loss of one that had broken off a piece of her heart she would never get back, she had her own salon, buying Brenda's place when Brenda ran off on her own husband with a guitar player from up in Maryville. It put them in debt, but while Viola wasn't one to agree with the preacher saying how God would provide, she believed he'd look kindly on those who worked themselves sweaty.
She did just that, spending often 18 hours a day on her feet, while Jack worked just as hard and long at Fester's garage. She had a fourth child, worked herself steadily out of debt, then dived right back into it when Jack started his own car repair and towing service. Jackson Donahue was the best mechanic in the county, and he'd been carrying most of Fester's business, as Fester was stumbling drunk by noon 5 days out of seven. They made their own, raised four children, and bought a good house. And with the nest egg Viola tucked away, she bought the old dry goods, expanded, and had the town talking when she put in three fancy pedicure chairs. Business stayed steady enough, but if you wanted more, you figured out how to get it. Tourists wandered through the ridge here and there, looking for quaint or cheap or picturesque in a quieter setting than Gatlinburg or Maryville. They came to hike and fish and camp, and some to stay in the Rendezvous Hotel and ride the Whitewater. Those on vacation tended to be looser with their money and more apt to take a few indulgences. So she took the leap, expanded yet again, and yet again. The locals called her place Vi's, but the tourists came into Viola's Harmony House Salon and Day Spa. She liked the sound of it. The latest, and Viola claimed the last, expansion added on what she billed a relaxation room, which was a fancy name for waiting area, but fancy it was. Though she enjoyed bold, rich colors, she'd kept the tones soft. Added a gas-burning fireplace, banned all electronic devices, and offered specialty teas made local, spring water, deep cushioned chairs, and plush robes with her logo embroidered on them. Since the expansion, this latest and last, had been in the works while Shelby had been moving from Atlanta to Philadelphia, Shelby hadn't seen it all done. She couldn't say it surprised her when her grandmother led her through a locker room changing area and into the room that smelled lightly of lavender. "Granny, this is amazing." She kept her voice down as two women she didn't know sat in oatmeal-colored chairs, paging through glossy magazines. "You try some jasmine tea. It's made right here in the ridge. And relax some before Vonnie comes to get you. This is as nice as any of the spas I've been to. Nicer." Amenities included shallow dishes of sunflower seeds, a wooden bowl of sharp green apples, clear pitchers of water with inserts holding slices of lemon or cucumber, and hot pots for tea clients could drink out of pretty little cups. "It's you who's amazing. It's not enough to have ideas if you just let them sit around. You come see me when Vonnie's done with you." "I will. Could you just check with Mama? I just want to be sure Callie's behaving." "Don't you worry about a thing."
Easier said than done, or so Shelby thought, until Vonnie, who couldn't have been more than 5'3", had her on a warm table in a dim room with soft music playing.
"Girl, you've got enough rocks in these shoulders to build a 3-story house. Take a deep breath for me now. And another. That's the way. Let it go now."
She tried. Then she didn't have to try. She drifted.
"How are you feeling now?"
"What?"
"That's a good answer. I want you to take your time getting up. I'm going to turn the lights up a little, and I've got your robe lying over your legs."
"Thank you, Vonnie."
"I'm going to tell Miss Vi you could use another next week. It's going to take a few times to get you smoothed out, Shelby."
"I feel smooth."
"That's good. Now don't go getting up too fast, you hear? I'm going out and get you some nice spring water. You want to drink a lot of water now."
She drank the water, changed back into her street clothes, and made her way out to the salon area. Four of the six hair stations were working, and two of the four pedicure chairs were occupied. She saw two women getting manicures and glanced at her own nails. She hadn't had her nails done since right before Christmas. While the relaxation room stood as a sanctuary of quiet, the salon rang with voices, the bubble of foot baths, the whirl of dryers.
5 people called out to her, 3 beauticians, 2 customers. So she got caught up in conversations, acknowledged offers of sympathy and of welcome before she found her grandmother.
Perfect timing. I just finished doing Dolly Wobuck's highlights, and my next appointment canceled, so I've got time to give you a facial. Go put a robe back on. Oh, but Callie's fine. She and Chelsea are having a tea party with costumes. Ada May said they hooked together like 2 links in a chain and reminded her of you and Emma Kate.
That's good to hear.
Shelby tried not to think of that cool look in the eyes of her childhood friend.
She'll have your baby home in a couple hours. That'll give you time for a facial and us time to talk.
Viola tipped her head, and the light through the front window tipped gold in the red.
Vonnie did you some good, didn't she?
She's wonderful. I don't remember her being such a little thing.
Takes after her mama.
She may be little, but she has wonderfully strong hands. She wouldn't let me tip her, Granny. She said mama had seen to it, and anyway, we're family.
You can tip me by giving me an hour of your time.
Go on, get a robe on. The facial rooms are in the same place. We'll be in the first one.
Get.
She did as she was told. She wanted Callie to make friends, didn't she? To have someone to play with, to be with. It was healthy and right. And foolish to feel so anxious because she was spending the day at her grandmother's salon.
I've got just the thing for you,
Viola said when Callie came in.
It's my energizing facial. It'll give you and your skin a boost. Just hang that robe on the hook there. Lie down here and we'll tuck you up.
This is new too. Not the room, but the chair. Some of the machines here.
If you want to be competitive, you've got to keep up.
Viola took out a bib apron and tied it over her cropped pants and bold orange t-shirt.
I've got a machine in the next room that works on lines with electrode pulses.
Really?
Shelby slipped under the sheet onto the inclined chair.
Only 2 of us trained to use it for now. That's me and your mama. But Maybelline, you remember Maybelline?
I do. I can't remember a time she didn't work for you.
Been some years, and now her girl's working here too. Laura Lee's got the same good touch on nails as her mama. Maybelline's training on the new machine now, so we'll have 3 can use it. Not that you have to worry about lines for some time yet.
She laid a light duvet over the sheet, then banded back Shelby's hair.
But let's have a look at things. Your skin's a little dehydrated, baby. Stress'll do that.
She started out with a cleanse, her hands soft as a child's on Shelby's face.
There are things a girl can tell her granny she might not say right out to her mama. It's that safety zone. And Ada May, she looks at bright sides. She's blessed with that outlook. You've got trouble, and it's not grief. I know how grief looks.
I'd stopped loving him.
She could say it out loud with her eyes closed and her grandmother's hands on her face.
Maybe I never really did love him. I know now he didn't love me. It's hard knowing that. Hard knowing we didn't have what we should have. And he's gone.
You were young.
Older than you were.
I got awful lucky. So'd your grandpa.
I was a good wife, Granny. I can say that and know it's true. And Callie... We made Callie, so that's something special. And I wanted another baby. I know maybe it's wrong wanting another when things aren't the way they should be, but I thought maybe it's just how it would be and it was all right. It could be good if there was another baby for me to love. I had such a hunger for another baby, such a yearning in me.
I know that hunger well.
And he said that was fine. He said it'd be good for Callie to have a brother or sister. But it didn't happen, and it happened so easy and fast the first time. I had tests, and he said he had tests.
Said he had?
Viola repeated as she worked a gentle exfoliant into Shelby's skin. I had to go through all his papers and his files after. There were so many things to go through.
Lawyers and accountants and the tax people, the creditors, the bills and debt.
And I found a doctor's receipt or invoice, whatever. Richard, he kept everything. It was from a few weeks after Callie was born, the time I brought her home, her first visit, and he said he had a business trip. He was so good about us coming home, he made all the arrangements, private plane and a limo to get me to it. But he went to a doctor in New York and had a vasectomy.
Viola's hands paused.
He got himself snipped and let you think you were trying to make a baby? I'm never going to be able to forgive him for that. Out of all of it, it's that I can't forgive.
His right to decide if he wanted to make another baby, but not his right to get fixed and not tell you. It's a terrible lie. And a man who could tell that terrible lie, live with that terrible lie, had something missing inside him.
There were so many lies, Granny, and finding them after he's dead?
There was an emptiness left there, Shelby thought, that could never be filled again.
I feel like a fool. I feel like I lived with a stranger. And I don't understand why he married me, why he lived with me.
Despite what churned up inside her, Viola kept her hands gentle, her voice calm.
You're a beautiful girl, Shelby Ann, and you said you were a good wife.
And you're not to feel like a fool because you trusted your husband.
What else did he lie about? Were there other women? I don't know for certain and can't ask, but I have to say yes from things I found. Yes, there were other women. And I find now I don't care. I can't even care how many. He took so many trips without us. And I went to the doctor a few weeks ago, got tested in case. He didn't give me anything, so if he had other women, he was careful. So I don't care if he had 100 other women.
She worked up her nerve while Viola slathered on the energizing mask.
The money, Granny. He lied about the money. I never paid much attention to it because he said that was his business and mine was to run the house and Callie. He could lash out like a whip over that without raising his voice or his hand.
Cold contempt can be a sharper blade than hot temper.
Comforted, Shelby opened her eyes, looked into her grandmother's. He cowed me. I hate admitting it, and I don't even know how it happened. But I can look back and see it so clear. He didn't like me asking questions about money, so I didn't. We had so much, the clothes and the furniture and the restaurants and the travel. But he was cheating there, too, and running some sort of scams. I'm still not clear on all of it.
She closed her eyes again, not in shame, not with Granny, but in weariness.
Everything was on credit, and the house up north, he hadn't made even the first payment on the loan, and he bought it back in the summer. I didn't know a thing about it until he told me in November we were moving. And there were the cars, and the credit cards, and the time payments, and some debts in Atlanta he left behind. Taxes unpaid.
He left you in debt?
I've been sorting it out and setting up payment plans, and I sold a lot off in the last few weeks. There's an offer on the house, and if it goes through, it'll take a lot off.
How much did he leave you owing?
As of right now?
She opened her eyes, looked into her grandmother's.
$1,996,089.
Well.
Viola had to draw in breath, let it out slow.
Well, Jesus Christ in a rocking chair, Shelby Ann. That's a considerable sum of money.
When the house sells, it'll cut it back. The offer's for $1.8 million. I owe $150 more than that on it, but they forgive that with this short sale business. And it started out around $3 million. Some over that with the lawyer's bills and accounting bills.
You paid off $1 million since January?
Viola shook her head.
That must have been one holy hell of a yard sale.
7. A massage, an energizing facial, and coming home to find her little girl bubbling over with happiness. Those went a long way toward lifting Shelby's mood. But the biggest lift had been unburdening herself to her grandmother. She'd told her everything about finding the safe deposit box and what was in it, the private detective, the spreadsheet she'd created, and her need to find a paying job as soon as she could. By the time she'd given Callie her supper, her bath, tucked her in for the night, she felt she knew all there was to know about Chelsea and had made a promise to have Chelsea over as soon as she could. She went back down, found her father stretched out in the lazy boy recliner he loved, watching a basketball game on his new TV, and her mother sitting on the sofa crocheting. She go down all right? Out like a light before I'd finished her bedtime story. You wore her out today, Mama.
It sure was fun. The two girls were like tadpoles swimming in their own pond, hardly still a minute. Susanna and I talked about taking turns, having Chelsea come here, then taking Callie there. And I've got Tracy's number for you right in on the kitchen board. You ought to call Chelsea's mama, honey. Make a good bridge there.
I will. You gave her a happy day.
Can I ask you for a favor?
You know you can.
I ran into Emma Kate today. I heard about that.
Fingers still working yarn and needle, Ada May glanced up with a smile.
It's the Ridge, baby. If I don't hear about something 10 minutes after it happened, I know I have to have your daddy check my hearing. Hattie Munson, you remember she lives across from Bitsy, though they're feuding about something half the time. They're feuding now because Bitsy's getting a new kitchen and didn't take Hattie's advice about the new appliances. Hattie's boy works for LG, but Bitsy bought Maytag, and Hattie took that as a personal insult. Of course, Hattie Munson takes offense if she sneezes in her own kitchen and you don't say gesundheit from yours.
Amused at the way her mother found a way to wind through a story, and how her father cursed at the ballplayers, the referees, the coaches, Shelby eased a hip on the arm of the couch.
So they might be feuding, but Hattie doesn't miss any tricks and saw you and Emma Kate outside Bitsy's house and saw you go on in. How's that kitchen coming? I haven't gotten over there in more than a week.
They were putting cabinets in. Pretty ones.
Emma Kate's young man, Matt, and Griffin. Cutie pies, the pair of them, and they do fine work. I'm having them do me a master bath, an en suite, out of your old room.
Now, Ada May...
Clayton surfaced from the game long enough to hear about the bathroom.
I'm doing it, Clayton, so you best climb on board. Griff said how they could take out that wall, and I could have me a spa-like ensuite bathroom. I've been looking at magazines, getting ideas, and Griff, he's got whole books just on plumbing fixtures. I've never seen the like of some of them. He's done himself an ensuite already. I went over to the old Triple Horn place to see it, and it's like a magazine, even if he is still sleeping on an air mattress on the bedroom floor. He's finished the kitchen over there now, and it just makes me green with envy.
Don't even start, Ada May.
I like my kitchen just fine,
she said to Clayton, then grinned at Shelby, mouthed, for now.
I bet you and Emma Kate picked up right where you left off.
Miles from that, Shelby thought.
That's the favor. She said she'd like to meet me tomorrow at Bootlegger's about 7:30 if I could. But you go right on and do that. Old friends are the bricks and mortar of your life. I don't know what I'd do without Susanna. Your daddy and I will watch Callie get her to bed. We'd love to.
Finally, something I can agree to.
Clayton looked over at his daughter.
You take some time catching up with Emma Kate. We'll spoil Callie.
Thank you.
She leaned over, kissed her mother, got up, kissed her father.
I'm going on up because a day of pamperings made me sleepy. Thanks for that too, Mama. And we'll need to eat at 6 tomorrow night. I'm cooking dinner.
Oh, but
I'm doing it, Ada May,
she said in the same tone her mother had used to her father, and had Clayton snickering.
I've gotten to be a pretty good cook, and you'll judge for yourself. I'm going to pull my weight while Callie and I are here because I was raised right.
Night.
She was raised right,
Clayton said when Shelby started upstairs.
So let's pat ourselves on the back there, and we'll see what's for dinner tomorrow.
She wasn't so pale and tired looking tonight.
No, she wasn't. Let's see how it goes for the next few days, and be glad we've got them home.
I am, and I'll be gladder when she makes things up with Emma Kate.
It wasn't hard to keep busy. By mid-morning, she hauled out the stroller. Taking Callie on a stroll around town, picking up what she wanted for the chicken dinner she intended to make for her parents, was an easy, casual way to wander around the ridge and see if anyone was hiring. The clouds had lifted, and the air had the bright-edged sparkle of spring after a shower. She put Callie in her pink denim jacket with a light cap, and since she might find herself applying for a job, did her makeup before setting out.
Are we going to see Chelsea, Mama?
We're walking to town, baby, to the grocery store, and I have to open up a bank account. Maybe we'll stop in and see Granny.
See Granny! Chelsea, too.
I'll call Chelsea's mama later and we'll see.
She passed Emma Kate's house, noted the workman truck in the drive, and had to resist the urge to lift a hand in a wave across the street where she imagined Hattie Munson's eagle eye was trained on her. People like Ms. Munson did plenty of talking, she knew. There was welcome in the Ridge, but there were those, and more than a few, who'd enjoy gossiping over the back fence and in the grocery store aisle, over lunch at Sid and Sadie, about the poor Pomeroy girl who'd come home a widow with a child. But what did you expect when she'd run off that way with a man nobody knew a thing about? They'd talk about how she'd moved north, rarely came home, dropped out of college after her parents had worked hard to send her. There'd be plenty to gossip about, and they didn't know the half of it. The smart thing to do would be to keep her head down, be friendly, and get steady work. Steady work would mean some sort of daycare for Callie, so that had to be balanced. Daycare would be good for Callie. Just look how she'd latched onto this Chelsea. She needed to interact with other kids, even if it meant most of any paycheck coming in went out again. While Callie talked to Fifi, Shelby took the fork into town. She kept her eyes peeled for houses for sale. When she moved out on her own, she wanted something close by. Close enough maybe Callie could walk to her grandmother's or to Granny's. To friends, to town, just as she had. A little house, 2 bedrooms, maybe with enough land for a small garden. She'd missed gardening in the condo and hadn't had a chance in Philadelphia. She let her mind drift, imagined the house in her head. Like a cottage, that's all they needed, and she'd plant flowers and have a vegetable patch, some herbs. She'd teach Callie how to plant and tend and harvest. She could haunt yard sales and flea markets for furniture, for bargains she could refinish or paint or reupholster. Warm colors and sink into chairs. They'd have a good life here, whatever it took to make it. She took the main road, with shops and a few old houses on each side of the winding street. She could work in a gift shop or wait tables, ring up sales at the drugstore or food at the market. Granny had told her she could come work at the salon, but she didn't have any real talent for hair, or a license. Whatever she did there would be make work, and her family was already making enough for her. She could check at the hotel, or the lodge just outside of town. Not today, not with Callie along, but they should go on her list. She liked the way it all looked, freshening up for spring with storefronts shining in the sunlight, tubs and hanging baskets of flowers decking the buildings that climbed up or down the hilly road. She enjoyed seeing people stopping to talk, a few tourists wandering along the steep sidewalks, hikers with their big backpacks taking pictures of the town well, where legend had it star-crossed lovers from feuding families would meet at midnight. Until the girl's father shot the boy dead, and the girl died of a broken heart. Their rendezvous, so it was said, gave the town its name, and the well, haunted, of course, ended up on a lot of cameras and canvases. Maybe she could get an office job since she had decent computer skills, but the truth was she had no experience there. Her work experience spread to helping out at the salon, filling shampoo bottles, sweeping the floor, working the register.